Captain Radio.
The ongoing discussion of the seriousness of concussion has come up for debate again recently. It was brought about when the AFL world was pretty much stunned by the sudden retirement of Melbourne player Angus Brayshaw due to ongoing concussion-related issues. It's a very serious situation. And joining us right now is Dr. Sarah Hellawell, Research Fellow for the Health Sciences Research and Graduate Studies here at Curtin University. Thank you for joining us today, Sarah.
My pleasure.
This is a situation, of course, that is not new. It's been happening with contact sport for forever, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So concussions are much older than contact sport, but it's something that we're seeing more and more in the media. We're starting to pay a lot more attention to as we realise that there can be very long-term consequences of concussion.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, concussion can occur if you're in a traffic crash or something like that, but it's more visual to us at all given times when you see them colliding on the field in rugby or AFL football or whatever. It is very, very frightening for the person. So, look, I heard the other day that there is going to be a situation where helmets are going to need to be worn. Is it by amateur sports people?
Yeah, there have been discussions about bringing in helmets, but the evidence isn't really there for helmets.
No.
So it sounds a little bit contradictory because we know with bicycling and things like that that it is good to wear a helmet, and certainly in sports like American football and some kinds of, ice hockey and things like that, where they're having those big collisions and they're wearing helmets that are protecting. But what we're seeing in sports concussions like AFL and rugby is that we have a rotation of the head as the person falls. We call that rotational acceleration. And this is really what's causing the damage to the brain and the ongoing symptoms that we can see. So wearing a helmet doesn't really help for that.
Yeah, I had heard that years ago because I remember putting a question to somebody about that because we saw the Americans, like you just say, wear helmets and they're padded up and they looked as though they're very protected. But it was made very clear, like you were just saying, that the skull actually moves around inside the helmet. Yes, it is a bit contradictory, isn't it? And I mean, with the sport the way it is, I can't see how anything is going to really change unless the rules are stronger. That there is not to be any contact to the point that we often see.
Yeah, that's right. And it's something that the AFL, you can see every year they're making small changes to the rules and starting to crack understanding putting in place guidelines around concussions and around tackling. So, for example, Angus Brayshaw, who's recently retired because of his concussion history, Brandon Maynard was cleared, but the AFL were clear that the rules really going forward will emphasise the duty of care to avoid high contact injuries.
Look, you know, we spectators don't like to see these things happen. I mean, if they think they have to be rough and tumble to entertain everybody, they've got it wrong. There's no two ways about it. You know, they've got mothers and families and everything, these players, and they do their very best and they get paid well. I understand it's very professional. But, you know, the red card thing perhaps should happen if somebody goes in and whacks somebody down, you know, deliberately. It's not in the, you know, field of play sort of thing. They should be taken off the field.
Yeah, it's something that has been, I think, considered, certainly been proposed, and as we see, it works in other sports. I think the culture is changing, though, with AFL particularly. We're starting to see that players, it used to be that they would really take a concussion almost as a badge of honour, and it was something that, you know, you had one and you had to be very tough and you got back up and took action and got back on the field. But now we're starting to really care about brain health and understanding that there's long-term consequences.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I just cringe. I mean, if I had a son out or a daughter out there playing and getting banged down to the ground, I'd be beside myself. Anyway, it's good to know that they're looking at it, but I would love them to speed it up just a little bit. If you could explain to us what actually happens to the brain with concussion.
Yeah, sure. So as you say, the brain is moving inside the skull when we have a concussion. And so we can see sometimes if you hit the front of your head, there might be damage on the back of your head because of that front to back movement, like a jelly inside of a hard surface. And so we, from the moment of concussion, it sets off these big biological cascades. So we have different chemicals that are coming in and out of cells. We have a greater demand for energy, which is not being met. We may have differences in oxygen concentration that are getting into the brain. And then we have damage to the cells themselves, and then a whole inflammatory response that'll be kicked off as well. And that can perpetuate some of the symptoms that we see, you know, people have being dizzy, people having headaches, even emotional problems after concussion. These can all happen.
So is it obvious right away if somebody goes to the ground because they have been bumped and pushed in over or whatever, is it obvious to everybody that they do have concussion, particularly the person themselves?
No, and this can be one of the really difficult things about concussion, because we know sometimes it's very obvious, you know, the person is not able to stand up straight, they may be vomiting, they're dizzy, they're clearly unwell after having a concussion, but you don't even necessarily need to have hit your head to sustain a concussion. Sometimes a blow to the body is enough.
Oh.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people don't know, so we're trying to sort of bring this into the public education and try and make this a public knowledge now. And even having, just certain symptoms that may not be so obvious, being slightly confused, just feeling a bit sad or a bit irritable, having just poor sleep, these can all be related to and signs of concussion.
But that's when they go home. I'm just wondering, when it happens on the field and they're taken off by the medicos, you know, they're concerned, are there any forms of diagnosing the player there and then if it looks like it's concussion?
Yeah, so there are some tests that we can do, some standardised tests, but the problem is we repeat these tests all the time. So it can be, if players are, you know, professional players especially, they're doing these tests often, they get to learn what the answers are. And so they then, we're trusting them to give us, not sort of repeat and rote learn what the answers are ahead of time. And it can be difficult for a medical opinion to say, yes, this is a concussion, or no, this person is fine.
But even if there's even a slight chance of being concussion and they do get medical attention and probably go to a hospital, what can they do at the medical centres?
Well, that's a good question. There's really not much we can do at the moment because we don't have any treatment for the underlying brain injury itself. So we can have supportive therapy, and we say things like, when you go home, you can rest, and we can give, you know, pain management. If people have pain, sometimes they'll have neck problems, so you may do physio or something like that, often a bit of occupational therapy, but there's no drug or specific treatment that can help for the injury.
Well, this is a very big concern, isn't it? And like I say, we the spectators don't want to see that sort of carry on the field. I mean, it's not sort of a deliberate to get someone to suffer with concussion if the player hits, bangs into them, but it can happen with the rules as they are. They have to be looked at. What about the long term? Okay, so you've got a player that's been taken off and there's symptoms of concussion. Can it be verified and diagnosed, especially that it is concussion eventually?
Well, there's no real test. So at the moment, we're looking at blood samples and we're looking at MRI scans and things like that to try and see, is there a marker in the brain or in the blood that is showing us, yes, this is concussion, or no, it's not, but we're not quite there yet. So it really is a judgment call of the player and the medical team to say, yes, you're ready to go back. So the AFL has brought in, the Sports Medicine Australia have brought out a new guidelines for children and for concussions in the community sport as well, saying that players should be out for several weeks before they return to training, and then at least another week before they go back to full-time competitive sport.
So the long-term effects, we mentioned Angus Brayshaw retiring. What is he showing symptoms of, and how long can it ever be cured?
Yeah, so Angus Brayshaw, he's an interesting case because he had, I think it was in about 2016, he had about 4 concussions in 12 months, which is really, it's bad news for brain health. And he was out for, I think, a season and a half. So he had a long recovery at that time before he came back to play. And that would have been based on how he felt within himself, how he was performing on his physical tests, as well as his tests for memory and attention, those cognitive tests as well. So now that he's had this big hit last year and he's retired, the club haven't said explicitly what has, you know, been the signs that it's time to hang up the boots. But he's They've said there's been a highly specialised brain scan that they've seen microscopic changes in the brain that had developed since this recent concussion. So I think he's had repeated brain scans, MRI scans, to show what's happening so they can look from test to test. Are there any differences?
Well, what about long term with this rest and tests and all that sort of thing? Can the brain repair itself at all?
Yes, the brain actually has a very remarkable capacity to repair itself to an extent. So we can rewire our brain. We can have new networks that develop and can sort of supersede any areas of damage. But if the damage is too great or we've had especially repeated concussions, that can potentially lead to long-term problems. So for some people, that's, you know, early after the concussion. So for Angus, he's, you know, been a few months since this last one and he's obviously feeling the effects. But for some people, they may feel fine and then years or decades later, they will start to go downhill and show some living signs of problems with their memory, their thinking. Sometimes they have Alzheimer's type phenotype, a Parkinsonian we see a little bit more. So we call that collectively chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and that's a diagnosis that can only be made once someone's passed away and we look inside the brain.
We have to move pretty quickly on this, don't you think?
I think so, yes. Yes, it's really time we make divisive action and decisive action to put controls in place to look after people's long-term health.
Yeah, we don't want our sportsmen having to think they have to provide, you know, provide entertainment like gladiators, you know, thrown in the ring and do your best and be a man and all that sort of thing. It upsets me. It really does. I mean, even boxing, you know, I look at people beating the heck out of each other. For why? Why? I mean, what are we ever meant to be doing? Entertained by that? My gosh.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we wouldn't think about it that way if it was a, you know, a hamstring injury. If someone had repeated hamstring injuries and couldn't walk properly, we wouldn't say get back on the field and be a man. We would say we can visibly see you have an injury, but because we can't see brain injuries so easily, it's a bit more difficult to get your head around, I think.
What about any particular sport? Are they presenting more with these injuries? Would it be rugby or football or, you know, ice skating or whatever, ice hockey?
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's the contact sports we tend to see. So exactly as you say, the football, the rugby, the ice hockey, the American football, but even sports like basketball and soccer, where they're hitting the ball a lot, they're not necessarily always having large concussions, but having what we call these subconcussive impacts, where they have small hits to the head, but a lot of them. And that can have long-term problems. And we're only starting to see the effects of that in soccer players and study that more now.
Well, they bounce the ball off their head, for goodness sake. I mean,
that's right.
Anyway, I'm, you know, everyone shows concern about all of this. And, you know, for the players, I know they have a short career. They're out there. They earn fairly good money because it's such a professional sport these days. But, you know, they really have to be protected. They've got families and everyone really very much cares about it all. Look, thank you very much indeed, Sarah. I hope you can keep in touch with us and let us know the progress of what can be done to prevent it in the future.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Yes, Dr. Sarah Hunnam.
Radio.